Welcome back to another episode of Schnepps Connects. Joining me today is Dr. Stephen Hammer, who is the founding CEO of the New York Climate Exchange, which is a groundbreaking initiative advancing climate solution from its hub on Governor's Island. Dr. Hammer is one of the world's foremost experts on climate policy, with over 30 years of experience spanning academia, international organizations, and urban climate resilience. Before leading the exchange, he served as senior policy advisor at the World Bank, where he drove key global initiatives on urban-scale climate solutions and climate finance. He's also held teaching roles at MIT and Columbia, contributing to urban energy and climate research. The New York Climate Exchange is a first-of-its-kind collaboration tackling the global climate crisis while centering equity, justice, and urban innovation. Dr. Hammer is here to discuss his journey, the exchange's mission, and the transformative impact it aims to deliver. So Dr. Hammer, thanks so much for joining.
Josh, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And I guess I'd love to get started with you just sharing more about the mission and work that's being done by the New York Climate Exchange.
Great. I think the first thing is an acknowledgement, and I'll apologize. There are helicopters circling Governor's Island today. So it's one of the things we try and pay attention to when we're doing audio like this. But nonetheless, the exchange emerged from an effort by the city and the Trust for Governor's Island to create a comprehensive center for climate solutions out on Governor's Island.
Okay. It,
leveraging the fact that there's already a lot there. You've got the Harbor School, you've got Billion Oyster Project, you've got some arts programming, you've got folks who are paying attention to composting, et cetera. It's a really rich set of resources already. But the idea was that we can do even more. We can begin to engage the public more systematically. We can begin to focus on, you know, having really compelling conversations, but do it in a way that brings in science more systematically, brings in entrepreneurs more systematically, to ensure that we're really learning and working together in a comprehensive way to deliver the solutions that we need at both speed and scale. And so the city put out the RFP and said, we'd like someone to come build this center out on the island. And Stony Brook University, the lead institution, pulled together a consortium of universities. I've got 11 academic partners. I've got three internationally renowned corporate partners, and I've got 33 community organizations that range from labor unions to cultural institutions to environmental justice groups to chambers of commerce, all of whom had a common interest in driving forward climate solutions that made sense for New York, but also made sense for the rest of the world.
So I know that the exchange is still being developed on Governor's Island. So I guess if you can share what that's going to look like, you know, where the current status is and, you know, what work can be done now versus what you have to wait to do until the center is open.
Yeah. So the plan is to open the full campus late 2028 or early 2029. When we do that, we'll have much more comprehensive educational programming in place. We will actually be having students live, university level students, either undergrads or graduate, live on the island. We'll have dormitories for them. We'll have faculty living on the island. They'll be working in their research laboratories. We'll have tech entrepreneur space, you know, ready to expose both the world and the students to new ideas, new innovations, new directions in terms of climate solutions. And then there's going to be this large conference facility. By virtue of having it all in close proximity, literally, the students walk across the courtyard and there's this really compelling policy discussion going on. Or the scientists can go next door and talk to the entrepreneur about how they can quickly take an idea and move it to market. The campus, because it's all climate all the time in terms of its orientation, the focus is on having this close proximity lead to faster deployment of solutions, identification of challenges, and in the meantime, we're trying to get that model working, even though we don't have the physical campus. So we are bringing people together. We are thinking about how do we begin to get the students engaged? How do we get change the research model so it moves from some abstract research question to something that's very applied, that's very relevant to, again, New Yorkers living out near Jamaica Bay where there's regular flooding or, you know, problems that are faced in other parts of the world, whether it's an island community, whether it is a city in another part of the world. there are things that we can be doing now, people we can be engaging to really animate that relationship we have across our partners, get them engaged, get them working in collaboration with stakeholders on the ground who are hungry for these solutions.
So it's going to be a few years until it's fully operational, I guess.
Well, the campus won't be fully operational, but our programming, we're starting now. Over the last 5 months, we've had gatherings focused on climate and oceans issues. What's going on? What's the current state of play? Where are there gaps? Where might we work together to do more? We've had two different conversations focused on AI and climate. Again, who's using AI in different ways, whether it's for power grid planning, whether it's for atmospheric modeling, climate modeling, whether it's for other research questions. We've had conversations related to climate and health. We call them ideas labs. We've had one focused on batteries and this notion of battery circularity. This was an issue that was actually put on the table for us by folks coming from City Hall who said, not necessarily just in New York, but you know, cities are buying fleets of buses for their public transportation system. Mm-hmm. But they're finding that as the battery reaches the end of its usable life, once it begins to decay a bit in terms of its overall charge capacity, you can't complete the bus route, so you have to change out the battery. That is still a really valuable asset, but there currently isn't really a market to use or reuse that in some meaningful way. So it ends up with zero economic value. So you have to replace it at full cost, but you can't recoup any of the value of the thing you are now getting rid of. So we were approached and they said, can you help us with this? Turned out we have battery experts at least six or seven of our institutions. We were meeting entrepreneurs who are coming up with new ways to quickly assess the health of those batteries. We actually have within our network at Georgia Tech a startup that is focused on reusing those batteries, turning it into a stationary backup battery that a building can use. So again, one of the beauties of the exchange model or broad coalition is that we can bring together these different research communities, and we're building out these strategic partnerships, the folks who want the solutions, who need the solutions, the community organizations, the governmental agencies. We're bringing them to the table and saying, okay, let's sit, let's identify what we can do together. Where do we need to make progress fast? What do we need to do first versus second? And let's come up with a game plan.
That's terrific. Is it your partners that are providing the funding, or is it relying on some city, state, or federal grants as well?
So the campus, we're looking for philanthropic support. The city of New York has been extraordinarily generous in terms of committing $100 million towards the cost of the overall campus. Wow. We've raised money from, again, very generous grants from the Simons Foundation, from the Bloomberg Philanthropies. We're out talking to other philanthropists about contributing to help build what we think will be this world-class resource that'll be based in New York City. We think there's a strong appeal that hopefully people will support. But in terms of the programming, again, very traditional sources. Are there, you know, again, foundation grants? Are there other philanthropists who want to support particular kinds of programming activities? Are there government grants? Are there revenue models for some of the activities that we're looking at that, mm-hmm. you know, we can turn into things that will turn into possibly a business spinoff? So we're looking at all of those things. And the nice thing about the exchange, again, you bring all these different kinds of partners together. Everybody has lots of ideas about where we might look to find that funding.
So Governor's Island is, you know, quite unique in New York City in that there's space. So what are some other benefits in terms of Governor's Island?
I think one of the reasons that climate began to emerge as a unifying theme for what we might do more of on Governor's Island is because the island is itself vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's coastal. New York City, 520 miles of coastline. We learned a lot from Hurricane Sandy about the kind of physical damage that buildings can suffer, you know, from a storm surge. We are having to take account as we think about constructing a new building, what is the elevation at which we need to build that? If we're thinking about that, that is research, that is information that developers around New York City can pay attention to. That is information that policymakers can be thinking about, as the city already is, in terms of the storm surge barriers they're building on the Lower East Side, over in Battery Park. You know, people are using science to drive investment, to drive policy. We can be a source of those kinds of ideas as well.
What do you think sets the exchange apart from other potentially similar public-private partnerships or climate-focused organizations?
I think it goes back to that fundamental model, which is who we're bringing to the table. The fact that it is universities plus the private sector plus communities. Oftentimes you'll see two of those. You see three, all three of them. It's rarer to see that. We think it's a very different conversation when you're talking about climate finance and you're trying to say, we need to move money at scale to ensure that we're delivering on those climate goals or targets that we have. But at the same time, we're trying to figure out how to make it work for the property owner who owns a house, they own a business where there's flooding, they need to make some changes. They're subject to Local Law 97, which you should be decarbonizing over time. They want to figure out how in a high interest rate environment they can afford to finance these upgrades. We want to be the solutions provider who is saying, help us identify what we need to do differently in terms of that financing conversation and make sure that we are bringing those kinds of solutions for different audiences to the table. Oftentimes, we're forgetting the little guy. We're forgetting about what it means to help average New Yorkers, average building or property owners navigate what can be a very complex conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was like my next question is, how do you feel that some of these solutions are going to benefit the local communities?
Well, part of it is we asked the community, where do you need help? We had a really interesting conversation this summer. You mentioned it earlier. It's not uncommon for academic researchers to find a community partner to say, I want to help understand what's going on in terms of the urban heat island effect in this part of Brooklyn. What would happen if we increase the level of tree canopy? That kind of stuff happens on a fairly regular basis, and it's great. But sometimes you can consider it as being supply-led, meaning a academic researcher has an idea and then they go find the community that might be interested in the answer, as opposed to the community gathering them together and saying, what is it that concerns you? Let's talk about climate change. Put some priority areas of engagement on the table, and then we'll design research programs that are answering the questions that you have. So it's more demand-driven. And we think that taking account of community needs, community concerns, is going to be a really core part of how we think about these things.
I would say that obviously global warming has been impacting with flooding and storms and things of that nature, but it's really the future generations that are probably most at risk. How do you see the opportunities that climate crisis is going to create for young people? And what do you think can be something that gets them engaged and a part of this research?
Well, I think that, you know, climate change will manifest itself in different ways. Again, we've talked about flooding. We've talked about sea level rise. We've talked about laws that are saying, let's have less polluting technologies, clean energy solutions. How many people would have put on their climate bingo card that there would be a fire in Prospect Park that would be linked to drought, or in Van Cortlandt Park that would be linked to a lingering drought? That is a signal of climate change, the fact that we are having these extended drought conditions, and that creates the vulnerabilities for fires. New Yorkers are waking up, and it's not smoke from a fire in Canada 2,000 miles away. It's literally from the park next door or a mile away. I think that's going to open minds to the idea of, we need to be paying more attention to this. And it's not just a tomorrow issue that our kids need to deal with, but it's actually an issue that is beginning to emerge in different parts of the city in different ways. And people are already bearing those costs.
What do you think are going to be some of the biggest challenges that we're going to have to prepare for? Some of the bigger challenges of the future?
I think that the climate change is a set of challenges, or are there also some opportunities? That's an important part of the conversation. We can't only see it as a glass half empty conversation. There are clearly changing technologies. You have the offshore wind industry. There is huge opportunities for job growth in Southwest Brooklyn as a result of industry deploying certain kinds of activities there that will feed that offshore industry, you know, 35 to 50 miles away. New Yorkers can capitalize on that opportunity. It's a great job creation opportunity.
Sure.
But totally take the point. Again, look at the investments the city has been making in terms of coastal resilience, as I mentioned, in Manhattan, and they're going to start doing some things in Red Hook and Brooklyn as well. Those are costly. New Yorkers are going to have to be paying for that. And it's all New Yorkers who are going to be paying for that, not just people who are in an affected neighborhood. So figuring out how we navigate the how do we pay for some of these things is something that everybody should be paying attention to and would benefit from some real innovation in that area. But, you know, in a city like New York, sea level rise, talk to the scientists. We are one of the few cities that has a scientific panel that is convened by City Hall that has put out several reports to date that already says sea level rise is happening. It's measurable. You can see, I think it's already a foot of sea level rise that's occurred in the Battery in Manhattan over the last several decades. And more of that is going to happen in the future decades. So how do we prepare for that? Again, is it coastal barriers? Is it designing our buildings differently? Is it encouraging New Yorkers to be aware that if you have a basement, you're going to need to think differently about how you construct that basement so it's easily repaired if there is flood damage? You need to think about keeping things out of that basement so they're not damaged. You know, these are issues that the average New Yorker may not have been thinking about, but they're things that we probably want to start talking to people about today, not just waiting for 10 years from now.
So what advice would you give to people that they should be thinking about in terms of practical solutions that they can implement today? Because a lot of people think about it as way into the future, but what advice would you give to people in terms of what they can be doing today?
Yeah, I think there are a few different things. So the first response I have is when you're in that election booth and you're picking you on different issues, make sure you're picking people who want to have a conversation or are open to having a conversation about climate solutions. They're not going to try and shut it down or deny that it's happening. That is very important. We need policymakers, we need politicians who are in office, who are working with us to help drive those solutions forward. That's the first thing. The second thing is, one of the things that's amazing about New York and one of the great resources that we often fail to think about enough is the investments that were made in the subway system 100 years ago, 125 years ago, that are one of the reasons New York has one of the lowest carbon emission levels associated with transportation and how we get around, how we go to the store, how we get to work. We benefit from an extraordinary public transportation system. So stay out of the Uber, pay attention to the public transportation options that are available to you. There's going to be more resources coming thanks to congestion pricing. I believe that's an important vehicle to help provide more money into that public transportation system. And the system is going to get better as a result going forward. And then the third thing is I think New Yorkers need to start educating themselves about these issues. I encourage everybody to come to nyclimateexchange.org, sign up, learn about the programming we're having, the lectures, the events that your kids may be interested in. We're going to have a wide diversity of programming, and we hope New Yorkers are active participants in that. But we're also going to be there in an educational role. What is it that you want to know more about? We want to understand where does the public, where does the local business community, what ideas, what information would you like? And we'll design programming around that. So if you help us understand what you think you want to know more about, we'll respond very quickly.
Well, I have to tell you, Dr. Hammer, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I wish you the best of luck in all of your research. And, you know, hopefully you can help support the implementation of things to help protect our city and end the world that we live in.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
All right. Have a great day.
Make sure to subscribe to Schneps Connects. You can listen to us at podcast.schnepsmedia.com or find us on all major podcast platforms.